Welcome to the Old Time Radio Daily Westerns. I'm your host, Andrew Ryans, and today is June 2nd, 2010. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon.com. If you plan on doing any online shopping, first go to otrwesterns.com/Amazon to start your shopping experience today. Today's episodes are going to be The Challenge of the Yukon. The first one, original air date's May 25th, 1944, and the title is The Idol. It's not the American Idol, but it's The Idol. The second one is June 1st, 1944, so just yesterday, however many years that is. I don't want to do the math. The title is A Joke Led to the Gallows. Hope you guys enjoy.
The Challenge of the Yukon.
A king and you have
the Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. In 1833, Alaska and the Yukon Territory were for the first time invaded by white men. Before these men appeared, the Yukon had known countless generations of peace, inhabited only by Indians who were disinterested in the yellow flakes of glittering ore they found in clear streams and along riverbanks. To them, animal skins were far more valuable, and it was for the same skins the Count Igor Petrunovich made the journey to an unknown land. But any furs the handful of white Russians secured were never to grace imperial robes in faraway St. Petersburg. It was late in an afternoon in the year 1834. A tribe of frenzied savages gave voice to a cry of triumph as they watched a fort the Russians had built go up in flames. They thought they had killed all of the white men when suddenly a tall, dark-haired man with flashing eyes walked toward them. His hand was raised, and in it was a small figure carved in ivory, studded with rubies and diamonds. Behind him walked an Indian.
Munalak! What are these peace-loving countrymen of yours saying? Why do they bow down in front of me? Can they know who I am? Do they know they killed the men I brought with me? I, Count Igor Petrunovich, from the court of Tsar Nicholas himself?
Them see fire in eye of little man you hold in hand. Them think you fire gun. Walk through fire, not be burned.
Oh, so they don't know I was not in the fort, eh? Tell them they must take me to their village. They must start building me a boat. Tell them, you hear? Tell them they have displeased the fire god. And unless they do as I command, fire will descend on their villages. Their people will be killed.
Count Igor Petrunovich joined an expedition at the headwaters of the Yukon River and set sail for his native Russia, thinking the idol he left behind was a small price to pay for his life. As for the idol itself, it remained with the Yukon Indians. Many years passed before white men again disturbed the peace of the North Country. The tribe moved their quarters and settled near a lake, the chief himself carrying the sacred figure to the site of their new village. Then, 1897, and in the white man's world, excitement was everywhere. Gold had been discovered in the Yukon. Sally Lawson, with her stepbrother Tom and Jim Wilson, left Dawson far behind them as their sleds covered the frozen trails. 4 days passed, then a week. And in the middle of the second week, as they sat beside a campfire, Sally spoke to Jim Wilson, glancing occasionally at her stepbrother, who stood inside the tent flap, studying a piece of paper.
He hardly talks anymore, Jim.
It's been tough on you, hasn't it, Sally? You never should have come in the first place.
Perhaps not. But Tom's the only relative I have, and I didn't want to stay by myself back in Seattle. Seattle. Seems like a long way from here, doesn't it?
I guess it does. Only, I wish you wouldn't worry about this. Tom got that map from an old-timer. He paid him for it, Sally.
Whatever he paid for it, I'm beginning to think the whole thing's a fake. I think we should turn back.
We'll wait a few more days. Give him a chance to prove he's right. Remember, part of my money's wrapped up in that sheet of paper, too.
Well, we can hope for the best anyway. Tom, I'm going to turn in.
All right. We'll start early in the morning.
Night.
Good night, Sally. Tom. Sally's worried.
Oh, she doesn't know what it's
Tom, I want you to be truthful with me. You've been off the track these last few days, haven't you?
Well, what do you mean?
Just what I said. We couldn't go back now even if we wanted to, could we? We're lost, isn't that it?
Yeah, that's it. And there's only one thing to do. Keep going.
It was a week and a half later that an Indian scout found them, wandering in the snow, half dead from hunger, half crazed with despair. They were taken to the Indian village. In one of the tents, Tom Lawson talked to the poker-faced Indian who'd saved their lives.
We sure are grateful to you. You've saved our lives.
Indian friend, white man.
Yeah. I wouldn't think you'd seen any white men to be friends with.
Yeah. We see many white men. Policeman wear red coat. Him talk to chief now. We see white man long, long time by. Him bring fire god to in it.
Fire god, huh? Who's that? Well?
The unanswered question aroused Tom Lawson's curiosity until finally, piece by piece, from various men of the tribe that had befriended him, he got the story and a description of the idol that couldn't be bought with any amount of gold.
Have you heard anything about it, Sally?
I? Goodness no, Tom. What do I care about the superstitions of these people? They've been kind to us, that's all that matters. You haven't seen that mitten of mine, have you?
It must be worth plenty. It can't be bought, they say.
I wish you'd forget about that little fire god. If I don't find my mitten, my left hand will be... That must be Jim. I hope he's found it for me.
Well, Miss Lawson.
Oh, how are you, Sergeant?
Hello, Tom.
Howdy.
I just stopped by for a minute. About the mitten you lost.
Oh, did you find it?
Oh, no, I didn't find it, but you certainly can't get along with only one, so I brought an extra pair of mine over. Probably too big for you, but at least they'll be warm.
Oh, well, that's very generous of you.
Not at all. No, I've got to get back. The Indians are having a meeting, and I've got to sit in on it.
That was nice of him, wasn't it? Is that warm? You know, Tom, I think we might as well go back to Dawson. That map of yours is worthless.
Maybe we won't get the gold we came after. But what if we could get something that would be worth a lot more than gold?
Worth more than gold?
Never mind, Sally. We'll get set to mush in the morning.
They left the village early the next day. Tom drove the dogs hard, and by the time darkness had fallen, they'd covered about 30 miles. That night in camp, Tom called to his sister and Jim Wilson.
What is it, Tom? Something wrong?
No. I just wanted to show you something. Look.
What an ugly thing.
Why, it's carved ivory.
Yes, and those awful devilish-looking red eyes. Almost look as if there's fire dancing in the... Tom, you didn't take it.
Sure, I took it. And just look at it. It's worth a fortune.
Tom, you shouldn't have. When the Indians discover
it. She's right. They'll be on our trail in no time. You've got to take it back.
After all the trouble ahead getting it, not on your life. Sally, hand me that extra mitten of yours.
What extra mitten? Tom, you've got to take
that
back.
Come on, give it to me. Preston gave you a pair, so you've got two right ones. Now, slip the idol inside it. A fortune in diamonds and rubies, and it fits inside a mitten.
When the next day dawned sharp and clear, Sally Lawson came out of the tent to find Jim Wilson standing beside the embers of the campfire.
Morning, Jim. I'll start breakfast right away. Isn't Tom up yet?
He's gone. Must have cleared out during the night. He took the sled with him. When the Indians come hightailing after us, it'll be you and me they'll catch. Well, Tom's making a getaway with a little fire gun.
The Indians arrived at the camp a short time later, and with them was Sergeant Preston and the great dog King. Preston and the chief of the tribe listened to the story the man and the girl told. But as the Mountie nodded, there was a wary distrust in the old Indian's eyes.
Fire god gone. You take Indian fire god. Indian kill you.
They didn't steal the fire god, but the man who was with them did. You can't kill him, Chief Owega. That would be murder, and you'll pay with your own life if you take theirs.
You say you catch him, thief?
Yes.
Bring him back to village with fire god?
Yes.
We take man and girl to village.
All right, and I'll go find your fire god.
I'm king! I'm you husky!
Meanwhile, Tom Lawson frowned to himself as he rode the runners of his sled.
Yes, sir. I'd like to know that mitten's right in front of me on the sled where I can see it. Only the darn things keep blurring. I can't. It's my eyes. Duh. Just as if I had sand in them. Ho, you Malamutes! Ho! I make sure that mitten's there. I can't. Ooh. I know what's wrong with my eyes. Sally's got the snow goggles in her pack. But I'm snowblind. I gotta get my hand on the bar of the sled. There. Now, mush, you Malamutes! Hey! The dogs are leaving me! I can't see! I'm blind! I'm snowblind!
When the dogs pulled, the sled had given a sudden forward lurch, throwing Tom Lawson off balance. He fell headlong in the snow. And as he raised himself on one arm, he could hear, but not see, his dogs fading in the distance. Struggling on in the snow, he was unaware of Sergeant Preston, who was already close on his heels.
Strange, that turn he made in the trail several miles back. Whether Lawson knows it or not, he's heading back to the Indian village. Maybe he intends to return the idol. Now, wait a minute. How are you, huskies? So you already discovered it, that fella. Tom's footprints go one way and his sled the other. He fell here, and the sled went on without him. Well, we'll follow him.
King took his place at the head of the Mountie's dog team. And as they covered the trail, his sharp ears caught the sound of another pack in the distance. Turning, King cut through the timber, the sound of the snarling dog serving as his compass. Following the tracks of the driverless dog team, King stopped suddenly. For a moment, he was puzzled. And then he slowly approached the supplies that were sprawled in the snow. He saw where the sled had overturned and had been dragged down by the dogs he could still hear. Seconds went by as the dog sniffed the air. A familiar scent filled his nostrils. Quickly, he found its source, Preston's mitten. In the Indian village, Sergeant Preston stood facing a circle of men who'd become suddenly unfriendly. Beside the Mountie stood Tom Lawson, his hands rubbing his burning eyes.
Him take fire gun. Him no have fire gun.
That's right. He doesn't have it with him, but it's on his sled. I'll go after the sled.
Sergeant Preston tell us him bring back fire gun. Him not keep promise. Indian no keep promise.
You must trust me, Chief, and I'll bring it back.
The policeman's words fell on deaf ears. A circle of faces began to close in on the Mountie and his companion. And then, looking beyond the Indians, Sergeant Preston saw King running toward him.
King! King, old fella. Where'd you find my mitten? I didn't lose it. There's something in it. King, old boy, you certainly saved the day this time. Chief, is this what you're looking for?
You bring back fire god. You keep promise.
Sergeant, are they going to kill us?
No, they're not going to kill anybody. But to tell you the truth, I was mighty worried for a few minutes.
Oh, Sergeant, isn't that the mitten you gave me? How did you... It's for the right hand. That's the one Tom took to put the idol in.
Sergeant Preston, Chief Owega, heap sorry him not believe you when you say you bring Fire God back. Indian never again not believe what you tell him.
What's he talking about, Sergeant? You mean you found the idol in the mitten?
I didn't find it, Miss Lawson. My partner did.
Your partner?
Yes, King found it. Yes, fella... Thanks to you, this case is closed.
Mm-hmm.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit, and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They are sent to you each week at the same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
The Challenge of the Yukon. The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. Wayne City in 1898 was a hurriedly thrown together settlement with a few frame buildings, scattered log cabins, and groups of tents. Its population included men of all types, most of them prospectors. But all of them had come to the Yukon with just one thought: to get rich quick. In front of the cabin that served as a post office was a sled and a dog team. Beside the team stood a lead dog, not harnessed to the pack, but part of it. His coat shone in the sunlight. His proud head was high, and the muscles of his body showed beneath his skin, even in repose, a reminder of strength and agility. His eyes were turned to a group of prospectors not a half dozen paces away from him. They were gathered about a clean-shaven man who looked expectantly at the faces around him as he spoke.
All right, men. Come on, step right up and get your cake of soap. It's mighty hard to buy up here, and I'm offering it to you at the low price of only $5 a cake. Ah, take a whiff of that fragrance, boys. You wash with this soap, and I guarantee you'll smell so good the ladies will come from miles
around.
Wait
a minute, Mike. You mean when you wash with that soap, you really smell like that?
You bet your life you do. You get clean and you smell good for the price of only $5. You going to buy a cake, mister?
Don't let him jip you, Clem. I bought a cake from him, and it not only don't get the dirt off, but darn it all, once you get the soap out of that there wrapper tin, there ain't hardly any smell to it at all.
Now, listen, Sam, if that was true, I'd give you your money back. I'm not trying to jip anyone, just make an honest living.
I'm telling you it's true, and I'm right here. But I know darn well I ain't going to see that $5 of mine again. If that's an honest living, I...
What about that, Mike?
Why, I'll prove it to you.
If you can prove it, Gallagher, by golly, I'll buy every one of them cakes of soap you're holding in your hand.
That settles it. You've as good as got them right now.
Yeah? How are you going to do it?
There's your answer.
Huh? That dog?
Where I come from, folks wash their dogs. Chances are that mutt over there ain't ever seen soap and water in his life. I'll get him clean, and what's more, he'll smell good.
Hey, now, Gallagher, you can't wash that dog.
Yeah, what's the matter? Backing out already? Come on over, Jen. I'll prove to you Mike Gallagher ain't misrepresenting this soap.
You're asking for trouble if you touch that dog, I'm telling you. Don't you know who he is?
Dog's a dog to me. All right, Pooch, you're going to get a bath.
With steady eyes, the great dog king watched the man walking toward him, the crowd following close at his heels. And as the man neared him, the smell of soap filled the dog's nostrils. It was a hated smell, and the cocksure man associated with it was even more repulsive. Mike Gallagher stretched out his arm to grab the collar about King's neck.
His owner's going to thank me for this, boys.
His owner ain't going to thank you for anything, Gallagher. I'm telling you, this
dog... He don't look like he needs a bath to me. Well, look at his coat.
Just that the dirt don't show. You'd be surprised.
Hey, you better...
Gallagher's hand touched the dog, and as it did, King bared his teeth. The hair on the back of his neck bristling dangerously.
Why, you... Gonna get mean, are you? I'll show you.
Get away from that dog, Gallagher. He ain't aiming to take no monkey with him.
King looked at the soap salesman, his eyes glowing fiercely. The dog hadn't moved an inch. And as he stood imperious and menacing, Mike Gallagher involuntarily backed away from him. His hands dropped to his side.
I told you to let that dog alone.
Well, we're all set now, King, old boy. Put the mail on the sled. There. All right, fella.
On King! On you, Husky!
Dog belongs to the Mountie, eh?
Yeah, and in case you never heard of him, that was Sergeant Preston. Next time you plan to make a dog out of fool, Gallagher, you better make sure who he is. Come to think of it, your little plan kind of boomeranged, didn't it?
Don't worry. I'm not forgetting that dog,
huh? I'll lay even money on it that he won't forget you either.
Months passed, and Mike Gallagher made his way further inland, selling soap in some towns and gambling in others. Finally, in Wesson City, he settled down, bought the Wildcat Saloon, and started in business. Behind the long bar in the Wildcat, two men worked filling and refilling glasses for the prospectors and trappers lined up in front of them. The younger man had an expression of determination on his face, and the bartender who worked with him glanced at him in disgust.
Oh, I tell you, you're completely crazy, Sam. Gone daft, that's what you have.
Oh, but I saw it myself, Barney. A solid piece of gold the size of my hand. There's more where that came from, and I'm going to get it.
Yeah, sure. And I guess you know exactly where to find it.
Hello there, Barney. Looks like you're having quite an argument. How are you, Sam?
Oh, fine, Sergeant.
This crazy fool's got the notion in his head he's going prospecting. Gold fever is what...
I've got enough money saved up to last me a while. And I'm hitting the trail in the morning.
You see, Sergeant? You can't talk any sense to him.
Well, maybe you'll be lucky, Barney.
Lucky? Sergeant, I've been filling glasses a long time for disappointed old leather-faced galoots hunting for the Rainbow's Inn. And all they get for all their trouble and digging is a busted heart. Well, I wish you luck, Sam, but I sure think you're making a mistake.
Barney Kramer went on with his job at the Wildcat Saloon, and for 2 months he didn't see Sam Ritchie. When at last they looked up to see the young man walking toward him, he could hardly believe his eyes.
By golly, I'm glad to see you, Sam. Well, the place ain't been the same since you left. What do you got up your sleeve? You look like the cat that swallowed the canary.
Look, Barney, is there any chance of talking to you alone?
Huh? Sure. I'll be with you in a minute.
Oh, there it is, Barney. You can see for yourself it's the McCoy.
Well, it sure looks like you struck it, kid.
Now, if you'll take me, we'll be partners in this. I want to go on working the claim, but... I just don't have the cash. I need to go ahead.
Well, to tell you the truth, I ain't got more than a few $100. You're welcome to that, understand. But I'm afraid it ain't enough to... Say, Gallagher's always interested in something that'll make money for him. Come on. There's no reason why this can't be a three-way partnership.
Sam Ritchie's strike proved to be even richer than he hoped. And as Mike Gallagher watched the returns from his investment piling up, he had no reason to regret the partnership he'd made. But the man was greedy as well as money-wise. And late one evening, hours after the Wildcat had closed, he went to Barney Craver's cabin.
Well, hello, Mike. This is kind of unexpected.
Oh, thought I'd stop in for a while.
Well, I'm glad you did. Say, were you talking to Sam? He came into town again this evening. And...
Yeah, I saw him.
Sure was a lucky day for us when we went into partnership with him, huh? Yes, by God.
Only one thing wrong with that partnership, Barney.
Huh? What's that?
Partnership usually means two partners. In this case, there's one too many.
I don't get you, Mike.
You will.
Hey, what's the idea of that gun?
That one too many is you, Barney.
Now, wait a minute. You can't...
Can't I? There's not a thing in the world to stop me. Snow's falling now. It'll cover my tracks when I leave here. Nobody knows I pack a gun.
Why, you double-crossing no-good scum! Ow!
You won't do anything, Barney. From now on, it's a two-way street. In a little while, the claim's going to have but one owner. And that'll be Mike Gallagher.
A short time later, Sergeant Preston arrived in Western City. He had decided against camping along the trail and had urged his dogs on, covering the last 20 miles to the settlement hours after darkness.
Well, King, old boy, we made it. It looks like everybody's turned in for the night. Oh, not quite everybody. Barney Kramer's still up. Well, let's stop in and see what the chances are of bunking at this place tonight. Oh, King, hold your husky.
The Mountie stood knocking on the door of the cabin, the light from the window shining through the falling snow. He waited for an answer. And then...
Barney. No wonder he didn't come to the door. Yes, son. He's dead all right.
King stood near the sprawling figure on the floor, two strong scents filling his nostrils. The scent of death he knew as soon as he walked into the cabin. But this other odor.
Barney evidently put up a fight for his life. He tore this piece out of the murderer's shirt. Now the snow's already eliminated any tracks.
Well, sir?
Murders have been solved with less evidence than that. What is it, Keith?
Boy.
The next morning, Sergeant Preston, with King at his heels, walked into the Wildcat Saloon. Even at that early hour, men were lined at the bar and sitting at poker tables, their eyes widening with surprise as the Mountie strode through the room. But more surprised than any of his customers was Mike Gallagher.
Well, Sergeant, this is a surprise. Didn't know you were in town.
We just got in last night.
Oh, you have a... Dog of yours seems to be in a bad humor. What's wrong, King?
King stood in front of Mike Gallagher, the dog's fur bristling stiffly from the scowling brow to the tip of the tail, bristling as it had done 2 months before. He recalled the obnoxious odor of soap as he glowered at Gallagher. The same odor he had detected in the cabin the night before.
What's wrong, King?
But the dog stood motionless, knowing Preston would not understand if he were to jump at this man.
If he doesn't stop that growling, you'll have to take him out of here, Sergeant.
He's on his mind, Sergeant.
Mike, King is an infallible judge of character.
Yeah? Well, he's judging the wrong man now. Get him outside. I'm not going to have any dog carrying on like that in here, even if he is yours.
Now, wait a minute. I just remembered. When we were in Barney Kramer's cabin last night, he acted the same way. As if he knew something that I didn't.
Oh, you stayed at Barney's last night.
I don't like to give orders to a policeman. But this is my saloon. There. And if...
Yeah?
Frisk him.
Go on. Keep your hands in front of you, Mike.
Hey, what's the idea? You can't get away with this.
Hey, what's this? Hey, Mike, I didn't know you carried a gun.
I'll take that. One cartridge fired. That's 38. Mike, this was the gun that killed Barney Kramer.
What? Why, you're crazy. I don't know anything.
Killed Barney?
Open your coat, Mike. I said open it. Where'd you tear your shirt?
Why, you won't get me up.
Get off of me! Stay away, do you hear?
All right, King, all right. Got all the proof I need, Mike.
Sergeant, you said Barney is...
Yes, Sam.
But why would Mike kill him? We were all partners. We never had any arguments or anything.
I don't know why exactly. Perhaps because he felt he'd get a larger share of the gold with Barney out of the way.
Poor Barney. Tell me, Sergeant, how did King know?
I'm not sure, Sam. In Barney's cabin last night, I wondered why he acted as he did. I guess I'll never really know the answer. But he was right. All right. Come on, Mike. Get moving. Yes, fella. The case is closed.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit. And all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They're sent to you each week at the same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
Welcome back. Well, I had a half an hour to do the math, and that would have been 66 years. Anyways, check out the show notes at otrwesterns.com. Send me an email, podcast@otrwesterns.com. Call, leave me a voicemail, 707-98-OTRDW. Again, that's 707-986-8739. Tomorrow's going to be an episode of Have Gun, Will Travel. Until then, have a great day, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.